On this very day, May the 20th, 100 years ago, in the middle of the afternoon, three men, Ernest Shackleton, Frank Worsley, and Tom Crean, staggered into Stromness, a whaling station in South Georgia. Their faces were black from blubber smoke, their hair was thick and matted, and they were dressed in rags. Gallantly, Worsley was concerned about the impression they might make on any women in the station, and he tidied up his tattered trousers with safety pins. And then they arrived at the manager's villa. Although Thoralf Sörle, the manager, had met Shackleton before, he didn't recognize him. "Who the hell are you?" he asked. "My name is Shackleton, and we have lost our ship and come over the island." Modern expeditions are properly equipped with communications devices and keep in touch via satellites. The Endurance Party experienced an unimaginable depth of isolation in which it was impossible to summon help if anything went wrong. Everything depended on one's comrades and the quality of leadership. Shackleton had already proved himself in this respect on the Nimrod expedition, on which he had discovered and named the Beardmore Glacier. He reached a point further south than anyone before him, but consideration for the lives of his comrades persuaded him to turn back less than 100 miles from the South Pole. He returned to London to an ecstatic welcome. It was the high noon of empire and of the Edwardian age. He published a book describing the expedition, The Heart of the Antarctic, in November 1909. He became an Edwardian celebrity and was knighted. Shackleton was a celebrity, but not of the shallow modern kind, well known just for his well-knownness. He was also a genuine hero with extraordinary leadership gifts which continue to inspire emulation at a time when in so many fields there is a need for inspiring leadership. Henry Worsley's book, In the Footsteps of Shackleton, is a moving testimony to this, as is the study of Shackleton's methods, sponsored by Professor Nancy Cohn of the Harvard Business School. The white wilderness is a great searcher of souls. And as Scott wrote about the Antarctic, under ordinary conditions, it is so easy to carry a point with a little bounce. Self-assertion is a mask which covers many a weakness. Here in the Antarctic, the outward show is nothing. It is the inward purpose that counts. So the gods dwindle and the humble supplant them. Shackleton had more than his share of charm and bounce, which enabled him to raise the considerable sums needed for polar exploration without very much official support. His business ventures were often imaginative, but not always successful. But, as he said himself, all polar explorers are optimists with vivid imaginations. And this carried him through every disappointment. But this was no mere outward show. On the ice, Shackleton revealed a humbling greatness of soul. And as he said himself, "We pierced the veneer of outside things. We had seen God in his splendors. We had heard the text that nature renders. We had reached the naked soul of man. He was a poet with a particular love of Robert Browning, but he was no armchair dreamer. He was also very fortunate in his wife, Emily Dorman, whom he married just down the road from here in Christchurch, Westminster, in 1904. And she said of Shackleton, "One must not chain down an eagle in a barnyard." We especially remember today the Endurance story, possibly the greatest example of survival in Antarctic history. The Imperial Transantarctic Expedition set sail in the beautiful August of 1914, authorized to get underway by Churchill himself, despite the ominous international situation, with a single word signal: proceed. Amundsen had reached the South Pole with a skillful use of dogs and skis in December 1911, but no one had yet achieved a crossing of the Antarctic continent. There is an apocryphal story that the members of the expedition had been recruited in response to a newspaper advertisement: men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success. In the event, apocryphal or not, the advertisement was not so far from the reality. This service, as Shackleton would have insisted, is not only dedicated to his courage and his endurance, but also to his comrades. Frank Worsley was one of three who arrived at the whaling station 100 years ago. He'd been appointed captain of the Endurance and had a close-up view of Shackleton's leadership style. He said that Shackleton had a genius for keeping those about him in high spirits. "We loved him. To me, he was a brother. The men felt the cold, it's true, but he had inspired the kind of loyalty which prevented them from allowing themselves to get depressed over anything. Shackleton could be irritable when things were going well, but as Worsley said, never when things were going badly and we were up against it." Napoleon said that a leader is a dealer in hope, and the boss, as the men called him, was a great and convincing optimist, supremely resilient in disappointment. And as he said himself, "A man must shape himself to a new mark directly the old one goes to ground." Endurance, as we know, was caught in the ice of the Weddell Sea and abandoned in October 1915. Camp was made on the floating ice for 6 months, and in April 1916, they took to the lifeboats. And after a dangerous voyage, including the unwelcome attentions of a pack of killer whales, the Endurance party made landfall on Elephant Island. After nearly 6 months of living on the ice, Elephant Island was the first solid land that they had seen in 497 days. Shackleton realized, however, that rescue was unlikely so far south, and so on Easter Monday 1916, he and five others set off in the 22-foot-long James Caird, and there is one of Hurley's superb photographs in our service paper showing the launch of this frail vessel, which I understand is treasured now in Dulwich College, Shackleton's own alma mater. Navigated by Worsley, the James Caird crossed 800 miles of some of the most turbulent seas on the planet. And on May the 10th, they arrived at King Haakon Bay, which is on the other side of South Georgia from the whaling stations on the North Shore. Shackleton set out with Worsley and Tom Crean on May the 19th to cross the rugged terrain of the unmapped island, and 36 hours later, they staggered into Stromness. He held together a disparate group in appalling conditions, avoiding cliques, treating everyone equally. All ranks were expected to scrub the decks and do routine tasks. He never took unnecessary risks, he improvised in a crisis, and never asked others to do what he wouldn't do himself. He instilled hope and belief that they would all survive. And when, after further disappointments and vicissitudes, he returned to Elephant Island, it was to find that all 22 other members of the Endurance Party had survived to be rescued. The Ross Sea depot-laying party was not so fortunate, however, and it's right to remember on this occasion the loss of McIntosh, Hayward, and Spencer Smith in the last great man-hauling expedition of the heroic age of Antarctic exploration. Our first reading from the book of Joshua ends with a promise: be strong and of a good courage, be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee, whithersoever thou goest. After reaching as far inwards as humanly possible, Shackleton records this: I know that during that long and racking march of 36 hours over the unnamed mountains and glaciers of South Georgia, it seemed to me often that we were four and not three. I said nothing to my companions on the point, but afterwards Worsley said to me, Boss, I had a curious feeling on the march that there was another person with us. Shackleton returned once more to South Georgia and died there on the 5th of January 1922. His last words in his journal are, a wonderful evening. In the darkening twilight, I saw a lone star hover like a gem above the bay. He was buried in Grytviken, head facing south. Sir Raymond Priestley, himself a polar explorer, a distinguished geologist, and one of the founders of the Scott Polar Institute, must have the last word. Sir Raymond said, for scientific leadership, give me Scott. For swift and efficient travel, give me Amundsen. But when you're in a hopeless situation, when there seems to be no way out, get on your knees and pray for Shackleton.